Welcome to Ask the Therapist, the podcast that invites you into the therapist room to explore the world of mental health with me, your host, Sarah Rees. Hello and welcome to today's episode. Today I'm talking with Laura Greenwood. We follow each other on Instagram and have done for quite a while, so it's always lovely to meet the real person behind the social media. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Laura is a psychotherapist and a maternal mental health coach, and she is building a team and making a huge impact out there in the world of mental health. And she supports families and parents being the best versions of ourselves. Because when we support parents, children thrive and then families thrive. And she's going to share today how she's making the impact, the support she offers people, and why you might choose to work with a maternal mental health coach. Hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the podcast, Laura. It's amazing to have you here. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And it's so lovely to be here with you. There's such a beautiful private practice community online, and so it's wonderful when we get to meet each other in person, albeit virtually. So yeah, a bit about me. So I'm Laura Greenwood. I'm an accredited psychotherapist, and I'm a founder of my own business, Laura Greenwood Therapy. Does what it says on the tin. And our business is all about supporting people with the specialism of maternal and paternal mental health. So we're a psychotherapy, coaching and wellbeing clinic, which focuses more so on those areas. But of course, I'm more than who I am at work. I'm a mum to my little boy, Owen. I'm a wife. I'm a friend to many. I'm an employer. And a big part, actually, of what I do and what I support people with is to help them to recognise that they're actually more than the roles that they play, and to step into that and to really value themselves as a unique human being in and amongst all of the roles that they play.
Oh, that's lovely. So do you employ other people? Are you just in private practice? Do you have any other roles?
Yeah, so I sort of a relatively new branch of Laura Greenwood Therapy as a way of helping to support more and more people. I have a number of associates that also specialise in maternal and paternal mental health, all exceptional therapists, which means that I can help more people through my work than I personally have the time capacity to do. But also as well, what this allows me to do, it gives me more time to partner and consult with other businesses around providing my expertise around maternal mental health. So really, my aim is to help as many people as I possibly can. And I know as one person on a one-to-one basis, there's only so much that I can do. I also go into a lot of parenting communities to offer talks and workshops on the real realities about what it means to be a mother nowadays and the struggles that we experience, to both normalise and validate those experiences and provide safe places for parents to talk about their challenges and provide hope, actually, that it doesn't always need to be this way. And as a team as well, we're actually in the process at the minute of building the corporate arm of our business, which is all about going into workplaces to change the way that they value and support parents for the benefit of parents, but for the benefit of children, for the benefit of the whole family unit and the benefit of their businesses too, to really support parents to balance those competing demands of mothering, parenting and work, which is a challenge that so many parents face nowadays. And it's something that we feel that more workplaces could do a lot better in, especially those that really want to do better but just don't know how to. So that's what we go in and support them with. And we're kind of working on how we can best do that as a team.
And you find them receptive, workplaces?
Do you know what? I think if I'm being totally, truly honest, I feel like there are some businesses that straight away are not up for it, or on paper, it it seems like a really, really good idea. But actually, when it comes to the reality of implementing some of these changes, for whatever reason, it just isn't necessarily high on their agenda. And then there are others that genuinely want to do better in supporting their parent employees, but just don't know how to do it in the most effective way that both benefits the parents that work under them, but also benefits their business. I mean, businesses and managers are trying to do so much, and they're often expected to be experts in everything, including supporting parents through fertility, maternity challenges, and they don't know how to do it. And often the really well-meaning ones don't want to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. And those are the businesses that we're really targeting, the ones that want to do better, because actually I believe once we show that this work benefits the businesses, then all the businesses that were maybe not so on board at first will follow actually too.
So once they start seeing the evidence of, if we make family life easier, our workplaces become much easier and more productive, I guess, and less sickness and things like that. So it's exciting, fantastic. What led you into this specialism of maternal and paternal mental health?
So, I mean, becoming a mum myself. Becoming a mum myself was definitely the catalyst.
How old is your little boy?
So he's 5 years old. He's called Owen. And he has been, I kid you not, my greatest teacher.
Oh.
And when I entered into motherhood, I think I became so aware that as mothers, especially, but as parents too, in general, we've been sold this lie about how motherhood and parenthood should feel, how we should experience it. But that is kind of a very narrow-minded view of how it looks or how it should look. And it's based on a lot of societal views about how we should find parenting or how we should experience it, but also often based on our own family dynamics growing up. You know, often the lessons we want to carry on from our own parenting, but also the ones that we really, really want to let go of. And I honestly believe that now there is such a huge pressure on parents to get it all right, to get it perfectly, as much as they might feel like they're not trying to do a perfect job. And when people's real experience doesn't match up to that expectation, a lot of parents, including myself, can start to question their abilities as a parent, and if they were ever meant to be a parent in the first place. And for me, I truly believe that this is a massive contributor to the development of clinical perinatal mental health difficulties, because actually we don't really talk about the real realities of what it means to mother or to parent in today's society. And I know from my own experience that, you know, motherhood, with all of its challenges, has been, as I mentioned, one of my greatest teachers. And it has taken me on a journey of self-discovery that I could have never predicted or anticipated. But I almost had to get thick in the struggle of it to be able to come out side. And I honestly know that parenthood, if we choose to see it this way, if we work through those challenges and we grow through those challenges, that motherhood and parenthood can be our greatest opportunity to find out who we are behind what the world told us we could be, we should be, behind our conditioning around, you know, what we believe we need to do or not do to be good enough, to be loved, to be accepted. And to be able to give that to parents just feels like such a gift, because I know the impact that has on them as parents, but on their children, to be able to grow up in a totally different way and viewing themselves totally differently. And for me, this is how we make such a difference to how society sees themselves, if we get them at that young age by supporting parents.
And the stresses and struggles of being a parent, the demands in today's world are just so overwhelming. And I think a lot of people and parents that I see worry about how their own mental health impacts children and families. Is this a real concern that people should have?
Yeah, do you know, this is such an interesting question, Sarah. And I feel like now we're information rich. We can get information and knowledge at literally the click of a button on our phone. And whilst knowledge absolutely is power. But the problem is when we are given so much information and often conflicting information that isn't relevant or personal to us as parents and our children, we can often read into it the wrong way and feel like, well, if I'm not doing exactly that, I'm doing it wrong. Now, most of the parents that walk through my virtual or physical clinical door usually do so because they want to be better for their children than maybe they had when they were growing up, or they want to work on their own stuff, their own struggles, for the benefit of their children. They want it for themselves. The main reason they want to change is because they want to be better for their kids. And often what I say to them is, you're already doing better because you want to do better. It's impossible to have any parent. It's impossible to have a perfect parent, for one. It's impossible to have a parent that does not have any struggle, any stress, any history from their own childhood that they don't bring into their own experience of parenting their children. So almost what I want to get out of is the idea of scaring parents, because I feel like there's enough of that that goes around already in saying what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing.
And there must be something in seeing our parents struggle and kind of get through it, so go through grief and get through it, and that resilience of facing like the life and bouncing back, because that's the reality, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you are hitting the nail on the head there, Sarah, because there is evidence out there. So there's a guy, people can look him up, he's brilliant, he's done some work around good enough parenting, Donald Winnicott. And essentially what's come out of his research is actually what supports children to grow, to build that resiliency. It's actually when we do make mistakes, when we fail them in small and manageable ways, just like some of the things that we've talked about, getting it wrong, making mistakes, owning up to those mistakes, showing us that it's okay not to be perfect, showing us that actually we need to look after our needs as adults too, as much as we need to look after your needs as children. And what this does is actually support our children in so many ways. So actually the worry about, gosh, is my current parenting negatively affecting them? It almost doesn't matter, because the worry itself doesn't change anything, but action does. Recognizing I'm doing something that I maybe want to do differently, or I know I want to show up better, and I know if I look after my own needs, I am going to show up better because I'm not going to be so overwhelmed and at capacity. That is all only a good thing. And children see that and they benefit from that more so than if we stay stuck in the struggle or worry about the impact of the struggle, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it can be hard to make that shift, can't it, to prioritising yourself, where your focus is solely on the child or children, to kind of see that if I switch some of that focus to me, that will benefit. That's a hard switch to make. What are some of the blocks you see people come up against?
Yeah, it's so hard. I see this block come up so much all of the time for a number of reasons. I think partly because as mothers especially, but all parents, you know, we're so overwhelmed by the day-to-day tasks of parenting. It takes so much physical, mental, emotional energy from us that even the idea of thinking about what do we need is like a job to do, or it feels like a job to do. And then what can happen is we can confuse what are my needs versus what I need to do. Totally different. But also one of the biggest barriers that I often find is mothers especially tend to have spent so much of their life, so many years, almost not listening to their needs, recognizing or feeling like other people's needs matter more than their own. So they focus their attention out from what do I need to what do other people need. And so they have no idea what they need. They've got no idea how to listen to themselves. And they have done that because at some point in their life, they were led to believe that maybe their worth was dependent on looking after the needs of others. That actually other people's needs mattered more than their own. But also there's a part to play here about societal conditioning around the fact that actually it's almost like when we enter into motherhood, like our needs don't matter anymore. When we become a mother, our kids' needs matter. And it's almost like we don't have needs anymore. So there's a sense of almost like, this isn't what a mother does. You know, a mother puts her child's needs over and above her own, and she does it effortlessly without complaint. And actually we're not, we're like swans, like literally looking like we've got it all together, pedaling away underneath the water, struggling. And then what happens is, as would happen with anybody who's at capacity over a longer period of time, it blows up and we react in ways that we don't want to. And we go, oh my gosh, this was because I didn't try hard enough. I need to try harder next time. I'm a terrible person. I'm a terrible mother. This is all my fault. And then the cycle just continues if we don't look after our own needs and recognize that maybe what's going wrong here is the fact that I'm not looking after my needs and I'm putting everybody else's needs over and above my own.
If you'd like to find out more about life behind the scenes of private practice, then why not join us in our Therapist Corner Substack community? Therapist Corner on Substack offers an exclusive look behind the scenes of the business of therapy, bringing together diverse perspectives and exploring the how and why of the business of therapy. Visit therapistcorner.co.uk to sign up or for more information.
It sounds like one of the first things you do is help somebody tune into their own needs. Is there any practical things that people can do? Because you have to suppose your first point is becoming aware, isn't it?
Yeah. And this can be really, really hard for people because, you know, so I could give a tip now, you know, and bearing in mind, I always say to everybody, start accessible. Like don't ever think that 5 minutes a day is not enough. If 5 minutes a day is what you've got, then utilize that, go for that. And then just literally, or even when you're doing certain tasks, if you've got a young baby, you're changing a nappy, you're making a drink, get into the habit of how do I feel? Because in order to access what you need to understand how do I feel emotionally, but physically as well. How do I feel? What do I need? And there'll be loads of times when people ask themselves that question and they're like, I don't have a clue. And that's okay, you know, because this is something that they're learning to be okay with learning. It's almost like I am learning rather than I know what my needs are and I'm going to give them to myself. It's I'm learning what my needs are. But the thing is often, and I will put myself in this category as well, a lot of people really struggle to be in stillness with themselves because they're really worried about what is going to come up.
It can be uncomfortable, can't it? If you've been shut off to your own needs and suddenly you start feeling them and then it's like more things to do.
Yeah, definitely. It can be so confronting. And it's almost like if I stop, what's going to happen? I might never start again. So that's one of the common fears. It might be, gosh, if I stop and listen to my needs, I'm going to open a floodgate that I'm never going to be able to shut. And then I'm going to lose control. I'm going to get lost in it and I'm not going to be able to live my life. Another common fear. Because a lot of us that keep ourselves busy are not always doing it because we are busy and we've got lots of things to do. It's because we're avoiding something. And if that is the case for people, I would always say, you know, you don't need to struggle on your own. You can absolutely get further support for that because sometimes being able to do that in a really safe and boundaried place can be so valuable and completely life-changing, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine. So when you work with people and you see that shift and they start tuning in with their own needs, getting to more aware of what they need, the support they need to give themselves, and then start making that change, what are some of the benefits you see?
So do you know what? I'm in 5 weeks into my online course at the minute, and it's such a joy, actually, because obviously I see in one-to-one work the differences that this makes. What's beautiful now is I'm seeing how it works in the context of a community, a supportive community of mothers. And actually watching them blossom into stepping into who they truly are, but unapologetically earning that as a human being, as a woman in their own right, but also as a mother, being able to make mothering choices in alignment with their own values. without so much, I mean, there's still the fear of judgment there, but eventually the fear of judgment will go for them. It's so empowering. And then to have other people around you going, wow, that's amazing, and cheering you on. And then being able to see the ripple effect of mothers doing that and other mothers going, I want a bit of that too. Like, it is honestly, it is magical to witness. And I think that is the key thing, is when people allow themselves to rest, to support and nurture their needs, what it allows them to see is, actually, what do I want? You know, how do I want to show up in this role? Not what, you know, this parenting book is telling me, not what my mom or my mother-in-law is telling me, not what, you know, this random person down the road who's never met me before is telling me I should do, but actually what's important to me. And then when you show up in that way, it is the most authentic way you can show up in your life, but also for your kids. And the thing is, your kids can tell if you're not being authentic. So this is how it benefits them too, because they're like, wow, my mom's amazing. Look at her stepping into who she absolutely is. And it's giving them permission to do the same as they grow into adulthood too.
Yeah, that's lovely. I love that idea of working now in a community, because there's stuff that, I mean, you can do lots of work in individual therapy, but that de-shaming and seeing other people go before you and try things out, and just that permission it must give people to kind of make different choices and change how they parent, must be amazing to see that. I know lots of people are nervous about group work, aren't they? But when you've actually experienced it, the learning, there's so many elements that are so much more powerful sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And every single one of the mothers that are part of my course, we're all, I'm not so sure. First session, kind of sharing vulnerability is really, really hard. And then I know once one does it, and then once they all step into it, just the power of that, because what they're often walking around with is this sense that I'm not acceptable as I am, you know, just as I am, you know, or I shouldn't take up space, you know, I shouldn't kind of ask a question, or I shouldn't share what's going on for me. So when they do that in a safe and boundary place, and then the other people bear witness to that without jumping in to try and fix or invalidating them, what that does is that already starts to shift their belief of, ah, okay, maybe I am worthy of being heard. Maybe actually I am okay just as I am. I'm not quite there in believing it yet. But these subtle experiences, pushing themselves out of their comfort zone and seeing a different reaction to what they've experienced before, is so powerful. And that is the power of group work over and above one-to-one, I think.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that kind of being a therapist gives me is kind of seeing so many people that are doing amazing things, but also we all have the same struggles at the end of the day. And I would imagine they see that as well, rather than thinking they're the only person in the world that has got these struggles or struggling this way, that, oh my God, other people do as well. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I think that's kind of a key part of the puzzle we're missing a bit, really, when it comes to talking about motherhood, fatherhood, parenthood. You know, if we don't talk about, you know, what it really feels like, and we're not saying it's all, you know, challenging. Of course, there's beautiful moments, but sometimes in motherhood, it can feel like those tiny pockets of beautiful moments are far outweighed by the challenge. If we don't talk about that, what happens is we internalize it and we think it's a me problem. And we think that, well, I'm the one that's doing it wrong and I'm failing then. When actually there's so many people walking around with those same challenges, but they're afraid to share it because they're worried about being judged by other people, because they're judging themselves already.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are the types of approaches do you use in your work? Could you talk us through some of those and what people could expect if they were thinking of having therapy?
Yeah, so my base training is in cognitive behavioural therapy. Cognitive behavioural therapy is an amazing treatment and is helpful for so many people. We are also very aware, the evidence shows it's only effective for 50% of people that have it. And there'll be loads of reasons why that is the case. So based on that, I decided to step into training in different approaches, just based on what I felt were the areas that I wanted to do more work in. So most of my treatments actually use EMDR therapy, or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, because I do a lot of trauma work, whether it be some of those bigger single incident traumas, or whether it be almost key moments and memories from childhood that are a key part of what makes mothers question their sense of self and their worth in the here and now. I also use a lot of compassion-focused therapy within my work, and that's all about helping mothers to turn that unconditional love that they have for their children back onto themselves, giving themselves that love that they have actually been craving their entire life. But also a really big part of my work is more, and I suppose if we're thinking about what evidence-based treatment this comes under, is acceptance and commitment therapy, really exploring people's true values, you know, that sense of who am I at my core and what really is important to me, not what other people have told me should be important to me, but then moving towards living a life in alignment of that with those values, so that they want learn to love themselves, but also live the best life possible and kind of get more of those feelings that I think really all of us are craving in our life, that sense of love, content, peace. You know, we think that we want happiness and excitement, but they're fleeting emotions. What we want to do is we want to feel like, wow, I am so at peace and have great gratitude for the life that I'm living. And I feel like values-based work really supports people to do that. So as usually what happens when people come in to Laura Greenwood Therapy, myself or one of my associates would do an assessment of their needs. And then based on whatever it is that they need, we would put a bespoke evidence-based treatment plan together and be very transparent with the client about what we feel we believe would be helpful to them, how that would look, and just check in with how they feel about that to help them make a really informed choice about their treatment, but also about their therapist. Because, you know, as much as that assessment is about the psychotherapist getting to know the client and how we can help them, private psychotherapy for me is such a personal choice. And for me, it's as much the client getting to know us and we're a good fit for them, actually. And I feel like that assessment is that opportunity to make that almost agreement together of, you know, are we going to set off on this journey together? This is how I believe I can help. And actually, do you want that? And really allowing them to kind of come and meet us in the middle if they want to, you know, empowering them to make that choice.
Yeah. It's so important that you connect with your therapist, isn't it? We know it was one of the things that most positively impacts good outcomes of therapy, is that you have that connection, you feel that you can be listened to, and you trust the person that you're working with more than how they're trained in some respects as well.
Absolutely. And this is the thing, and you'll know this, Sarah, that, you know, we can be trained in, and of course evidence-based therapy is so, so important. You know, these people are trusting us with their stories, their life, their vulnerability. So we want to make sure what we're doing, we know it's going to work. But actually, when clients come to see us, they don't really often, I mean, sometimes they'll say, I want EMDR, I want CBT. In the main, they say, I want help, help me. And our job is to go, right, this is what I know or believe is going to help you. But actually what they're looking at is, can I be helped? Can you help me? Am I willing to let you help me? And that comes from the relationship, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. That's lovely. And is there themes of things that you see people coming through with? Or do you, like, I'm seeing more people come to my clinic now that aren't in crisis, no specific problem, but they just want to be the best version of themselves. They just want to understand the past and the mind, which I think is a huge change, you know, over the 10 years I've been doing private practice.
Yeah, you're so right. You are so right, Sarah. And I would say, and I feel like, again, I mean, talk about the power of society and conditioning, like, there's such a shift in how we view therapy now and how we view mental health and well-being, I believe. And, you know, for me, I don't feel like you need to go and see a therapist when you're at rock bottom or you're experiencing clinical mental health difficulties. Like, I truly, honestly believe that actually people want to live the best life. And why not? Like, we're on this planet for a finite period of time. why would you not want to live the absolute best life? And so actually similar, you know, a big reason why a lot of mothers come to see me, and it is actually one of my specialisms, and it's when they feel really lost, like either I've lost myself in motherhood since I became a mother, I've no idea who I am, or I have never known any idea of who I am, but I want to find out who that is. And I want to find out who that is because I want to be the best version of myself for my children. I want to be that change so that actually maybe they have a different experience growing up. So lots of kind of questions around sense of identity, but also I think, you know, just to really normalize it for the parents that are listening, you know, so much mum guilt, parent guilt, excessive levels of guilt, rage is something we do not talk about enough, kind of almost like I'm patient, and then just I'm not, almost kind of exploding, but then feeling awful about that. Intrusive thoughts in motherhood that can be really, really scary. Lots of actually trauma, maternal trauma at different phases of motherhood. So from fertility challenges to pregnancy to birth trauma, and then actually postpartum experiences that have been very, very traumatic, but also any of those experiences re-triggering earlier traumas from earlier within their life. Lots of perfectionism and people pleasing. And I truly believe that actually these clients come to me because I'm going to be honest, I have worked on and probably will for the rest of my life be working on some of those traits within myself.
I think it seeps through what we put out online, doesn't it? Because so we kind of work with, often find ourselves working with people that have the similar struggles that we've done a lot of work on, and that's lovely work to do. You've mentioned society's narratives and pressures a number of times. What are some of the narratives you think we should be working on?
Kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but whether we are aware of it or not, I think that when we enter into this role, or even when we kind of decide that this is a role that we want as part of our life, to be a mother, to be a father, to be a parent, we enter in with an idea, an ideal about how we think it should look or should feel, or about how we're expecting it to go, you know, or I'm definitely going to do that, or I'm definitely not going to do that. We all do it, whether we're aware of it or not, even if we say, I'm just going to go with the flow. Like all of us have an idea. And that comes from our own conditioning within our family, but also it does come from societal expectations. And I truly believe that the minute the narrative is that when we enter into parenthood, we fall in love with it. We enter into this role and it just fits us like it was always meant for us, because of course we are made to grow and birth a child, and so as a result of that we just know how to mother, when actually it is a new role. It is a brand new role we have never done before. And even if kind of we're going from one to two, two to three, we've never been a parent to two children, three children before, we are learning how to be in this role, who we are in this role, as much as our children are learning to be in the world. And there isn't enough of that that he's talked about. So there's this sense that we just kind of know how to do it. We fall in love with it. We don't struggle. Or when actually we don't have needs anymore. We, you know, not only do we not need, we not kind of put our needs first, we don't even have needs anymore. But also we look after the household. We're also working alongside and we're being the best of friends. We are calm, we are patient, we are the epitome of the perfect mother, and then whatever we believe a perfect mother means to us. And actually it's rubbish, it's ridiculous, because the thing is now there is more pressure on parents than ever before, because we're so information rich about what our kids need or what they don't need, that we're so afraid to get it wrong. We want to do better for our children than we had. We're often working alongside. We're also managing other caring responsibilities. And also, even when, you know, and I am blessed to have a very, very present husband and father, but even when we have that, we are never going to get true equal roles when it comes to mothers and fathers. We just it's physiologically impossible. We can move towards equity, but whatever we do, mothers are going to carry the vast majority of the physical, the mental, the emotional labour of raising children. And that is why mothers especially, but the whole family unit, requires more support. So the narrative has to change to actually recognise the real reality of the challenges that we face. And then I believe once we do that, once we change the narrative, there'll be more of a recognition of the support needs that we have too.
And I think we used to have so much more family support around us, which people don't have at all, do they? So grandmothers and grandfathers and bigger networks of people that would come in and help us. You know, people listening to this might be thinking, actually, you know, they might have probably tuned into this because they think it's of interest to them that they might need support. And this might have thought, right, I might take the next step. What would that look like in terms of kind of accessing therapy?
So I would say amazing, the fact that you've decided that that is something that you are worthy of, deserving of, and that is something that you need. I would celebrate that all of the way, because as soon as somebody celebrates that, it makes you want to do it even more. Like, we value and benefit from cheerleading as much as our kids do. And then I would just say, actually, you know, and I suppose there might be parents listening to this from various stages of their motherhood journey, and the reason why I say we are a maternal and paternal specialist clinic is because actually for me, I believe that we've got different needs at different stages of our parenting journey, not just within that typical perinatal period. But within that perinatal period, so from pregnancy to postpartum, in most places it's up to 1 year. In some places it's now up to 2 years, which is amazing. In some places, dads also get this access to support as well. Sadly, as with a lot of things, it is a little bit of a postcode lottery, unfortunately. But there is priority access to support for those challenges within that period. And what that means is that you go straight to the top of the waiting list for support and treatment. Unfortunately, outside of that time, whilst there is access to various forms of support to people struggling with their mental health and well-being, it's not always priority access. And unfortunately, within the NHS now, a lot of the free services for therapy have some quite hefty waiting lists that go alongside them, which is why I think a lot more people are accessing private psychotherapy. And also as well, and again, this is why one of the reasons why I stepped into doing what I do is often there's almost a cut off, as in, and I hate saying this, but sometimes people are not bad enough, as in their struggles are not at a level which is deemed a mild to moderate mental health problem.
So short-sighted, because we're not doing that preventative work and supporting people at the earliest stage possible, which is the best time, isn't it?
Absolutely. And as we will know, it's called watchful waiting, isn't it? Or we'll just see how you go. But the problem is, and especially when, and I do believe, honestly, especially when this is the case with parents, if we don't support them at that early fit, for me, that without a shadow of a doubt, it could massively prevent the development of more clinical mental health difficulties, but then also difficulties that could arise within their children, because children learn more from what they see than what we say to them. And if our children witness us look after our own well-being, if we learn how to regulate and manage our own emotions, they are learning through us too. So that means they grow with those skills, which then means they'll have less of a need for support services later down the line. Potentially, obviously, none of us can ever predict the future, but it can only be a good thing for both parental mental health, but also the mental health of children and the well-being of our whole society as a result of that.
Yeah. Are there any other practical tips that you'd recommend, or any resources or books that if somebody wasn't ready for therapy that you often recommend to clients?
Yeah. So, and again, I'm just going to touch on the fact that at different stages of parenthood, we need different things. So if somebody is recognising, I need to start supporting myself differently, I'm not ready for therapy, or I don't want to access it, or I can't afford to pay for it, and I'm not waiting 6 months in order to see somebody, what I would say is recognise that their needs are of equal importance as their children. And I think often we can get a little bit confused with the imminence of need. So obviously we know our baby, they're dependent on us, so they can't feed themselves. They can't rock themselves to sleep. They can't change their own nappy. So they have needs that are dependent on us. The thing is, that doesn't mean that our needs don't matter as much as them just because theirs are dependent on us and theirs are more imminent than us. So it's about recognizing what is their imminent need that I need to take care of now. And actually, where can I either say no or prioritize myself or get a little bit of support? And I would say accessing support in whatever way is accessible to them. So if it's not practical professional support, you know, can you get support when it comes to ask your partner, ask your other half for a lie-in at the weekend, for example, ask a friend or some in-laws to come and help you with your baby, with your child. However, I realise for some people this is not accessible because they don't want to be away from their baby or they don't want to be away from their children. And that causes anxiety, which of course is going to be more stressful, not less stressful. So it's then recognizing, well, what else can I get help with? You know, can I get somebody else to help more with the cleaning or the cooking? Also, what I would say is sometimes we can get so caught up in everything that needs doing. And the thing is that to-do list will literally never end. You could chip away at it every single day, bit by bit, and there would always be something new to add to it. So I would say if you are exhausted, if you are on your knees, you feel like you're going through the motions, the cleaning can and absolutely will wait. Your needs and your child's needs are of utmost importance and you cannot rest enough. And at some point that cleaning will get done. And I think it's about being okay and giving ourselves permission for that to be the case. Recognizing on those days, there are key things that kids need. They need to feel loved. They need to feel safe. They need to be fed. And actually, on those days where you just think, oh my gosh, I have got nothing to give, if those are the only things that you give to your children, that is enough. And everything else really is just garnish. So kind of coming back to those non-negotiables until you're able to get to a point where you've got a bit more capacity to maybe give a little bit more again.
That's lovely. It's such straightforward kind of, sometimes we think it's obvious stuff, but I think sometimes people need to hear it and be almost given permission to do that. So I'm sure there's lots of people listening, taking a sigh, feeling their shoulders drop, kind of got that permission to focus inwards a little bit. Is there any areas in kind of mental health development that are exciting you? Any new kind of fields of research or anything you're aware of?
Yeah, do you know what? Like, I would love to be involved in this research. In stepping into private practice, one of the reasons why I stepped into it was I saw a huge, huge group of women, of mothers that were just not being supported by mainstream services. And I had this self-belief that I thought, do you know what? Maybe actually I could fill that. And the part that is missing is exactly what we were talking about in terms of the preventative side. The conversations about the realities, about what is really quite common and normal to experience within motherhood at various different stages, to normalize it, to validate it, to offer safe places to have those open conversations to change this narrative. I believe this preventative piece of the puzzle is going to be huge for both maternal and paternal mental health and child mental health and society. I would love, love, love to be part of, if anybody's listening that is into research, by the way, totally message me about this if this is totally your jam, to actually be involved in some research which almost looks at the impact of that on the later development of perinatal mental health difficulties and actually recognising, does that early piece of work reduce the likelihood of the development of that? Because I believe if we can evidence that, that is going to show us the importance of this part of the puzzle.
And then that triggers more funding, which is absolutely needed. It's in dire straits, isn't it, the NHS, unfortunately, at the moment. And the final question that I ask all my guests is, if you could go back to your 15-year-old self, what would you say to the younger version of you?
Oh, do you know, this is such a lovely question. I just love questions like this. They're so reflective. So I'd probably say, just because of knowing kind of what has happened post my 15-year-old self, I'd probably say that at some point you are going to go through, in the not too distant future, a really challenging experience that is going to be totally life-changing for you. It's going to be really hard and you're going to get through it. And when you have time and effort and energy and skills to process that experience, that and the other challenges in your life are going to be the making of you. And it is going to mean that you help so many people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think that everybody can identify this as their 15-year-old self, because I think we all do. You're going to question your worth. You're going to question what you need to do to be loved and accepted by other people. But actually, you're amazing just as you are. And when you realize that and you step into that, actually, this is the greatest gift you're going to give to yourself and to give to everybody that you come into contact with. So that is what I would say to my 15-year-old self.
That is really lovely. Thank you so much. And I'm sure people are going to want to find out more about you and the services you offer and the courses you're delivering. Where's the best place for people to find you?
So various places, probably the easiest is if people go onto my website, which is www.lauragreenwoodtherapy.com. And there's a contact form on there. There's also my email and phone number on there. But also as well, as you mentioned, we connected via social media. You know, I'm very social. I often share my words of wisdom to normalize and validate the common things that we go through as mothers, but also some lovely messages of hope too. So if anybody wants to kind of come and follow me and give me a little wave or give me a little shout, I'm on Instagram and Facebook, Laura Greenwood_therapy, or on LinkedIn as Laura Greenwood if anybody wants to connect with me on there too.
And I shall put all the links in the show notes and people can come over and say hello. Thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation. I think it's going to be very well received to lots of people that need to hear it.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me, Sarah. It's been lovely. It's been a joy.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Ask the Therapist. I'll be discussing all you've heard in this episode and more over in the Therapist Corner community on Substack. To join me there, just click on the link in the show notes. Until next time, take care of your mental well-being as you continue on the path to becoming the best version of yourself.